Welcome to the Riches Podcast Documentary. I'm Robert Castanello, and I hope you are enjoying our summer content before we launch our new series, A History of Central Florida, in the fall. What I'm bringing you this week is an unreleased podcast I recorded a few years ago. I met up with two women who worked as farm workers in Apopka since they were young children. And now they are commemorating the lives of Central Florida farm workers in a quilt designed to tell the stories of individual workers and their families. Originally, this was part of a larger podcast project that ultimately fell through. But before I abandoned it, these recordings with these two women I held on to in hopes to release them at some point in the future. At the time of the interview, the quilt was unfinished. Now it is completed, and traveling the state has the Lake Apopka Farm Worker Memorial Quilts. You can go to the internet and look up the Lake Apopka Farm Worker Memorial Quilts, find their website, and you can see where the quilt is currently being displayed and where it's touring the state. These interviews were rich in life history, and I wanted to share them with you. The women I spoke to were Linda Lee, who created the quilt and travels around with the quilt, and Geraldine Matthew, who was involved in organizing community support for the quilt. This podcast will be broken up into three parts. In part one, Linda Lee and Geraldine Matthew tell me about growing up as farm workers and the role a handful of Catholic nuns had in launching the Office of Farm Worker Ministry. Farm workers like Geraldine Matthew and Linda Lee, along with the Office of Farm Worker Ministry, successfully organized numerous programs and protests to improve the lives of local area farmers. And this is the story that they tell in part one. Part two, Geraldine Matthews continues the discussion of the plight of farm workers and their attempts to organize and engage Apopka officials in improving the lives of farm workers. Finally, in part three, we hear the story of the inspiration for the memorial quilts, and both Geraldine Matthew and Linda Lee give us the poignant stories of the lives of the people memorialized in the quilt. What you're about to hear next is part one of Apopka Farm Workers. Linda Lee begins by telling us about the lives of farm workers.
Well, I was born in Apopka. My mom and dad became in Apopka in their 20s, and they were in their pulp mill where my father did, and my mom, she worked at doing housework and washing and cleaning. Later on in the 30s, my grandfather started working on a farm, and as my mom started getting to have kids, all of them started working on the farm right along with her. When Papa started, the whole family began to go out there, and we worked in a different list of stuff such as chicory, extra row, lettuce, romaine, squash, corn. We did it all. Even we hold out the small vegetables daily. We did a whole lot of cleaning up the side of the rows to keep the flow of water to come through when they flood down through the fields or water the vegetables when it gets too hot sometimes. So we worked on the farm mostly. Well, I worked on the farm until 1980, from 1968 to 1987. Yeah. I worked on the farm doing the odds and ends. Well, I did a whole lot of different stuff. I mostly, the last, I did checking. I checked corn. That means I had to count the boxes as the people pack them that come down from the mule train, and then I got off the mule train, went to the shed, and was on the shed with the corn boxes. So it was time was hard, and as we worked in the field, there was no running water for us to drink. There was no restrooms. We had to use the bathroom in the field, so we wore pants up under our dresses, and we squatted in the fields and other ladies we were staying, because we were always being an all-women's crew. The men, we might be in the field over summers, but we was an all-women's crew that working daily doing different stuff. The men, they worked in the crew by themselves because most of they was like cutting leaf stuff or cutting what they call orders. That means cutting leaf stuff, and there's so many boxes they had to get out for the day and put on a truck to go out because they had to go to some kind of somebody brought them, so they went to some kind of store or whatever. And there was a lot of things to do out there. And we was out there most of the day, every day when we wasn't in school, because when we was in school, my mom made us go to school. But the days that we was out, such as when they were having different things, we stayed and worked in the farm from sun up to sundown a lot of times to get orders out, because there were certain orders you had to get out in a run of a day.
Did you work anywhere else besides the park?
I worked a little in Belgrade, not that much. And I worked there when I got grown, but long as I was, when I was a child, I worked that on the farm with my grandfather, because, like I said, he run the crew. After my grandfather died in the 60s, my grandmama, she took his crew over, and we worked with her. Well, my sisters worked with her. And then my aunt, when my aunt took the crew over after grandmother got too old, my aunt Caribbean, she took the crew, and that's when I was working with her doing hoeing and pulling, thinning out corn and different stuff.
And I worked
on the mule train.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me, for people who aren't familiar, what the crew is, how the crew operates?
A crew is a lot of people that get together. Maybe sometimes it might be 10, it might be 20 or 30 or whatever. Sometimes it would be up to 60. You go out in the field, and whatever you had to do, whether you had to cut leaf stuff and load it, or cut it, pack it, and load it, we're sending out the field, that's what we did.
So what role would your grandfather have in the crew?
The role, my grandfather did the same work that everybody else did, but he was the person that took everybody to the field. You know, he'd pick up people from their houses and take them out to the field. We work a day's work, and then he'd bring them back home to their houses or whatever.
So he had a truck?
He had a truck. He had his own truck.
And then when he passed away, who took over his
business? My grandmother took over, but my sister Margie drove because grandmother didn't drive.
Okay. What was it like for these women to take over the job that your grandfather had over here?
Well, it was all right with them because they were willing to work. They worked hard, just as hard as we did. Wasn't nobody standing up with nobody looking. Everybody got down and did a job. Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me a little bit about in the 70s, what were some of the issues that you all faced in the field?
Oh, we faced a lot of issues. Like I say, there was no bathrooms, and there was no, when you ate, you didn't have nowhere to wash your hands, and then some of the crew leaders was kind of rude to you. They was really rude to you because, and like I said, if you had to get an order out and you had, say, like 1,000 boxes to get out, it meant a rush, 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 rush. They wanted to get it out quick. And sometimes when you get up in the morning, you don't feel your best all the time. And some days it's just not, you know, up the pot or just be trying to rush. You know, you want to take the pace at doing something, but they want you to really just like you a machine, cutting this stuff and then put it in the boxes and get it on the trucks and get it out. And, you know, a lot of time it'd be a conference between the grower and the people that work in the field, because they would say, I'm not a horse, I'm not a mule, I can't do this and I can't do that. And a lot of time they would get angry with the people that get angry with us in the field and talk a whole lot of trash, in which we would thought that we didn't have to take it. So a lot of time we would switch growers and go to another grower to try to help them out, so we wouldn't, you know, try to keep the peace.
So you all were independent contractors, and you would go to a farmer and say, we're willing to work for X number of dollars?
Yes, well, you could switch our farm. You wanted to switch longer then, you know, because if you didn't feel like one farmer was treating you right, you can go to another grower and work with them.
Did you recall any differences between your generation and earlier generations as far as you were treated in the field?
Well, I heard, I don't know, that it was worse in the field before we started in the field. you know, on certain farms because they was really dog people out. But I have never had to go through that because the people that I worked for was Mrs. Fruitland, they were very nice to me. And we did, got our orders out and that was it and went home. But there have been girls that was actually nasty. I worked for Les one time and they trained me, they let me train their daughter to take my job. And when I trained her, I had sense enough to train her wrong. So she screwed up. Because I know I was supposed to lose my job. Mm-hmm. And then when they asked me for me back, I told them no. They had to find somebody else. So they lost a lot of money because they couldn't get a checker.
What's a checker?
A checker is when the board that we had out for the farm workers, it's got a belt on the machine where women sit in the stall and they put the corn out on the belt and it rolls back. The time man tied and then it comes around on a belt and every box got a number on it. I have to record all those numbers on a piece of paper and sometimes it'd be right. 3,000, $5, $8, or what crates of corn. I have to keep them boxes straight in order for everybody to get paid. And we have someone who can pack up to 900 boxes a day. We had a couple of them right there. They was hard-working women. Like, everybody work hard until you learn how to do it because packing corn is not easy. They cut your hands up, your cuticles. You know, standing out there, you eating gnats and flies half of the day, and, you know, it's a whole lot of different stuff. The sun burns, you're on the side where it burn it, and you get burnt all down one side of you. So you're facing a lot of stuff. And then the corn is spread with a whole lot of chemicals. So you're something to have all kind of little funny rashes on you. It might be something like a butterfly, what they call a butterfly rash, and then sometimes it'll be something like a potato grater rash, you know, your skin just be pulling off like you're a gopher or whatever. So it was a lot of different things that we faced in the field.
So were you treated differently than men in the field?
Well, the men were treated more different than the women because they were doing the harder work. Some of the women did hard work because, like I said, in the women's crew, we had to load our boxes sometimes. We didn't have no man. We didn't have no man to make the boxes, and making boxes is not easy neither. We didn't have no man to load the boxes, and we had to drive the truck. We had to drive the truck from the field to the packing house, and then that's when the men were loaded onto the trailers to go out. Because after they run them through the cooler, we was all women's. By ourselves, did all our work. And then sometimes we used to get caught in what they call a muck storm. That's the fun thing. Because once you get caught in the muck storm, it's like flying. Somebody just say, and it be all over you. You can't see. And it's paste all over your body. And it pretty hurt because it itches and stays and burns.
Were there any jobs that men didn't do or jobs that women didn't do?
Well, on the farm, everybody did it all. If you could drive a truck, you drove a truck. If you could rick-rack a woman, you rick-rack it till you get a man to rick-rack. We done pretty much did everything it was out there to do.
Did you ever meet any folks coming in try to organize you all into unions or advocacy groups or anything like that?
No, we didn't have anybody come in. Until the farm workers stepped in and Mother Teresa and them, they was trying to help us get more equal rights for us to work in the field and stuff. But before then, nobody came in to try to help us out.
The four sisters came to Apopka just to help the community. The community was in crisis, and they came to work in the community. And they saw the crisis, and they began to work with the community, the peoples in the community. And from there, they didn't have an office. They organized out of their homes. And they started educating the community about it could be a better community. And they organized the workers, and the workers started growing their own vegetables. And they took the vegetables and they sold the vegetables to market. From there, they began to set up a base. And as they continued to organize, people in the community began to learn how to fight for justice, which at that time, they was afraid, African American was afraid to go to Tallahassee to fight for any rights. So the sisters educated us about and trained us how to be able to fight for your rights. So in the 60s, when Governor Graham was the governor, there was a lot of people from Apopka left to go to Tallahassee. And from there, they got a chance to see what it was like to talk to the senators. They learned who their representatives were, which we had never known. We'd never known who was representing the state of Florida or our county or our district until the sisters came there. And from there, we started going to Tallahassee every time it was legislators was in session, we started going there. And it was so much that we learned. As far as the farm work issues, they really didn't get involved with the farm workers. Sister Ann would come to the fields and just take pictures of the people when they're harvesting the vegetables. They was more into the orange picking because there was a lot of racial stuff going on, and Coca-Cola had tried to form a union, and then they ended up with a union. But as for the farm workers, nobody tried to form a union. Even when we became members of the Farm Workers Association, people did not want to work us. The big farmers did not want to work us because they was afraid that we would eventually form some type of union. They accused the sisters of organizing a union. And then we had to go in as workers and tell them, no, this is not a union. These people are here to help us get better education. And then the growers simmered down. Mm-hmm. And they didn't retaliate against us like they had started. Mm-hmm. There were many growers that moved. We had to leave them. We could not work for them because we was members of the Farm Workers Association. At that time, my mother was a dedicated member to the organization. And matter of fact, it had even became an organization. Mm-hmm. And they just, you know, retaliate against the workers every day. So the workers ended up going to Zellwin Farms, which was at that time Beechnut Farm, and it wasn't a family-owned farm. It was a cooperation. So the more people worked for them than worked for the little private farm. Mm-hmm. As for Linda worked for a family farm, mm-hmm. and it was totally different. If you worked for a family farm, you had more say. You could go straight to the owner of the farm. And if you work for the larger farm, that's when all the retaliation and all of that would come out. And that's where, at the larger farms, where the men and women were separate. But the work that the men did, the women did not do them. But on the family-owned farms, the women did it all. You didn't even have to have a man, or you didn't have to have a woman. Everybody did all of the work.
Thank you for listening to the Riches Documentary Podcast. Please join us for part 2 of this episode.